Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Monday, September 16th, 2019. Coming up this hour.
Oil jumps the most on record after an attack in Saudi Arabia removes 5% of global supply.
We need to know, is this a 48-hour outage or is it a four-week outage? And that's really what's going to drive prices.
Plus, China's economic slowdown deepens, prompting calls for more stimulus.
President Trump defends Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh after new allegations. Plus, New York declares a state of emergency over vaping. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stanshauer in sports. The Giants fell to 0-2. They lost at home to Buffalo. The Yankees fell in Toronto. The Mets were beaten by the Dodgers.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York. Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 1061 Boston. Bloomberg 960 San Francisco. Sirius XM 119. And around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
And good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Commonwealth Financial Network. For the sixth straight time, J.D. Power ranks Commonwealth number one in independent advisor satisfaction among financial investment firms. Visit Commonwealth.com to learn more.
And global stocks are falling. Oil is surging to start the week. 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 13 points. Dow futures down 106. NASDAQ futures down 59. The DAX in Germany is down 0.6%. So is the CAC in Paris, and the FTSE 100 is little changed, down less than 0.1%. 10-year Treasury up 20, 30 seconds, yield 1.82%. The yield on the 2-year, 1.75%. NYMEX crude oil is higher, up 7.5%. COMEX gold is up 0.7%, up $10.80 to $15.10.20 an ounce. The euro 1.1059 against the dollar. The yen 107.78. Nathan.
Yeah, Karen, oil is surging. It's posted its biggest intraday gain ever after a strike on an oil facility in Saudi Arabia. We get the very latest from Bloomberg's Anthony DePaola in Dubai.
We are still waiting for some evidence on who was culpable for the attacks. And more importantly for oil markets, we're waiting for some information about the extent of the damage to those facilities. President Trump made a tweet where he seemed to leave it open that they're waiting for some verification, and they're also waiting for the Saudis' view on who was culpable before they decide what the reaction will be.
And the immediate aftermath of the attack, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo blamed Iran, and President Trump says the U.S. is, quote, locked and loaded if it's found Iran is behind the attack.
Meanwhile, Yemen's Houthi rebels are claiming responsibility. Here's Houthi leader Mohammed al-Bakati speaking through an interpreter.
We exploited vulnerabilities in the Saudi defense system, and we built our drones in order to avoid these systems. Therefore, the Saudi and the Emirati airspace became open to us after their defense systems failed to even spot our drones.
And Yemen's Houthi rebels say they will continue to target Saudi Arabia and that their weapons can reach anywhere in the kingdom. Still, several White House officials say there's evidence Iran was behind the attack.
Now, Brent crude futures in London jumped $12 at the open, though prices have since pulled back. Jason Shenker is president and founder of Prestige Economics.
There have been some analysts out there whisper numbers, oil could go to $100 on this and those sorts of things. I'm a lot more skeptical of that because the demand side isn't great.
For oil markets, it's the worst sudden disruption ever, though Saudi Arabia could return some supply within days. Ashley Peterson is senior oil analyst at Stratus Advisors.
You know, Saudi has enough oil in reserve to meet exports over the next week, certainly. That was a very smart move on their part to build out these international storage reserves, and that's what they'll be tapping into over the next 7 days or so. It's this demand assessment that's critical. We need to know, is this a 48-hour outage or is it a four-week outage? And that's really what's going to drive prices for the next couple of days as we wait for more clarity.
Now, checking prices now, West Texas Intermediate's higher by 7.6% or $4.18, $59.03 a barrel, while Brent is higher by 8.1% or $4.88 at $65.11.
And we turn now from attacks in Saudi Arabia to unrest in Hong Kong. Protesters battle police for a 15th week with demonstrators setting fire to a key subway entrance. Bloomberg's Sophie Kamarudin is there and has more from the streets of Hong Kong.
Small groups of protesters used petrol bombs. The police deployed tear gas and rubber bullets, and a water cannon was deployed to push back some of these more violent protesters as well. And I'm here in Wan Chai. This is one of the sites of the clashes. The MTR station here had two entrances set on fire. In the wake of that, the MTR, the subway operator, has said legal action may be taken. And we also had, in his first public remarks on the protest, HSBC chairman Mark Tucker condemning the violent activity while also maintaining its confidence in the future of Hong Kong as a financial hub.
Remaining demands from protesters include an investigation into use of force by police, amnesty for those charged during demonstrations, and the ability to vote for their leaders.
Now, the editor-in-chief of China's most prominent state-run newspaper, the Global Times, says Beijing isn't ruling out the possibility of military intervention in Hong Kong. Hu Xijin spoke exclusively to Bloomberg.
This option should not be ruled out. Our armed forces gathered and drilled in Shenzhen, sending a warning to Hong Kong extremists. I think it's very obvious, but central government would only take the measure in a very cautious way. They wouldn't make the decision rashly. Instead, they would like to see the problem resolved by Hong Kong itself.
Protests are taking a toll on Hong Kong's economy. Travelers at the international airport are down 12% from a year earlier.
On the economic front, data from China is weighing on sentiment, with industrial output at the lowest level in 17 years. We get more from Bloomberg Daybreak Asia anchor Brian Curtis in Hong Kong.
Factory output rose just 4.4% from a year earlier versus an estimate of 5.2%. It's clear the current level of stimulus is not getting the job done, and more is expected. Retail sales expanded 7.5% below a projected 7.9%, and over the first 8 months of the year, fixed asset investment slowed to 5.5%, also below estimates. In Hong Kong, Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
And the data out of China and the attacks in Saudi Arabia weighed on stocks in Asia today. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally has details from Singapore. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. The MSCI Asia Pacific Index ex-Japan, which was closed for a public holiday, fell for the first time in four sessions. Energy stocks in the region gained. Losses were heftiest in Hong Kong and Mumbai, while markets in Seoul and Shanghai fared a little better as they played catch-up after being closed Friday. Also boosting sentiment for those assets was projections of further stimulus from Chinese authorities following yet more dismal data. And the higher oil prices saw most emerging Asian currencies fall, led by a drop in the Korean won. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Juliet, thanks. This is Bloomberg. And it is now 5:07 on Wall Street. Time to check the latest world and national headlines. For that, we say good morning to Bloomberg's Michael Barr.
Good morning, Nathan. President Trump and Democratic candidates are reacting to new sexual misconduct allegations against Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. The New York Times reports that a Yale classmate of Kavanaugh's says he saw Kavanaugh expose himself at a party his freshman year in 1983. President Trump is defending Kavanaugh, tweeting, "He is an innocent man who has been treated horribly. Such lies about him." Several 2020 Democratic hopefuls are now calling for action. Beto O'Rourke suggested the previous allegations were not thoroughly investigated.
The FBI, pressured by the Senate, not given the time necessary to perform the due diligence so that the Senate could make an informed vote on one of the most consequential nominations and decisions for this country.
Senator Elizabeth Warren tweeted, "Like the man who appointed him, Kavanaugh should be impeached." South Korea clarified its foreign minister's remarks, saying now it can't confirm North Korean leader Kim Jong-un invited President Trump to visit Pyongyang. The White House offered no immediate comment on the report. New York's governor has declared a state of emergency ban on flavored vaping products. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
Governor Andrew Cuomo says he's taking the executive action because 68% of users use flavored product, and it's aimed at the young.
What the vaping companies will say is, well, it's better than cigarettes. That is true. That is like saying hitting yourself on the head with a wooden stick is better than hitting yourself on the head with a metal stick, okay?
He says the action will take place in about 14 days, and the state will also look at menthol and tobacco flavoring along the way. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
About 22 people were injured after a deck collapse at a home in Wildwood, New Jersey over the weekend. Three decks pancaked on each other. It happened during the New Jersey Firefighters Association weekend in Wildwood. Some firefighters were among those injured. Another member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has died. Rick Ocasek, frontman for the Cars, has been found dead in a New York City apartment. The NYPD says officers responding to a 911 call found Ocasek Sunday. They said there was no sign of foul play. Rick Ocasek was 75. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thank you. It's coming up to 5:10 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Here's John Stashow.
Nathan, the Giants are 0-2. In both losses, they scored early, but in Dallas, they gave up the next five touchdowns, and yesterday, Buffalo scored the next three. Giants did play better in the second half, but just after they cut the Bills' lead to seven, they let the Bills go right down the field and score again. Buffalo won 28-14. The Bills are 2-0. It happened four times at Giants Stadium, but the Bills are the first visiting team to win games in consecutive weeks at MetLife, having opened up with the comeback win over the Jets. The Jets, without quarterback Sam Darnold, host Cleveland tonight. Last night in Atlanta, the Falcons blew a lead, trailed the Eagles.
Shotgun snap comes in on fourth down. Ryan throws left side. Julio Jones with a catch. Got a block. And Jones on the loose to the 40. Breaks away at the 30. Down the left sideline to the 10. Looks over his shoulder at the 5. And flies in for 6. 53 yards. Julio Jones takes it the distance. And the Falcons take a 23-20 lead with 2:10 to play.
Good one to call. 24-20 the final. Atlanta over Philly. 2 weeks to go. Baseball regular season. Every Mets loss very costly at this point. Last night they led the Dodgers 2-1. L.A. scored in the 8th inning, again in the 9th, and won 3-2. So on the weekend, Mets dropped 2-3, while the Cubs had a sweep to go 4 games ahead. Yankees lost in Toronto 6-4. They used two pitchers who hadn't pitched all season, Jordan Montgomery and Dellin Betances. Betances threw only 8 pitches, but an indication he could be used out of the bullpen in the postseason. And tomorrow night, as the Yanks return home, they'll start Luis Severino. It'll be his season debut. With a Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stanchell. Nathan.
All right, John, thanks. S&P futures lower by 13 points. Dow futures down 111. NASDAQ futures down almost 58. This is Bloomberg. The sports update was brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Let Burden create innovative tax solutions to benefit your family and your business. Visit burdenllp.com. Burden Accountants and Advisors. They listen, they solve, they do.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and oil is jumping the most on record after a strike on a Saudi Arabian oil facility removed about 5% of global supplies. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day. On Bloomberg, right now, NYMEX crude oil is up 8.8%, up $4.81 at $59.67 a barrel. Brent is up 9.5% right now. S&P futures lower, down about 14 points. Dow futures down 114. NASDAQ futures down 59. The DAX in Germany is down 0.8%. 10-year Treasury up 22/32, yield 1.81%. The yield on the 2-year, 1.74%. COMEX gold is up 0.7%, or $10.50 at $15.09.90 an ounce. The euro, 1.1063 against the dollar. The British pound, 1.2438. And the yen, 107.72. And today we're watching for a report on Empire Manufacturing at 8:30 Wall Street time. And we're watching Schlumberger up 6.2% this morning. Stop upgraded to overweight from equal weight at Barclays. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. A report detailing new sexual misconduct allegations against Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh has some Democrats calling for his impeachment. According to the New York Times, the accusations come from a Yale University classmate's claim that he witnessed the justice's sexual misconduct while they were both in college. President Trump defended Kavanaugh, saying such lies about him. President Trump said the U.S. is locked and loaded, depending on verification that Iran staged the attack on major Saudi Arabian oil facilities. In the NFL, the Giants lost. The Patriots won, along with the Ravens and the 49ers. The Redskins and Raiders lost. The Jets host the Browns tonight. In baseball, the Yankees and Mets lost. The Red Sox won, along with the Orioles, A's, Giants, and Nationals. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. It's 519 on Wall Street. Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak. I want to continue to look at the broader implications of this weekend's attack on Saudi oil facilities. For that, we welcome in Ian Lingen, head of U.S. rate strategy at BMO Capital Markets. As we look at the risk from this, Ian, is there a risk that if we continue to see a prolonged increase in oil prices, that that could bleed into inflation?
I do think that there is the potential for headline inflation to be higher as a result of a prolonged increase in energy prices. However, it's important to keep in mind that there is a key difference between demand side and supply side inflation. So a shock of this nature, when it comes through to the end user and the consumer, is ultimately going to function more as a tax on spending rather than be a reflection of strong internal demand that the Fed would like to see behind the its push for higher inflation.
So what does that do for the Fed's thinking going forward when it comes to the path of monetary policy?
If anything, and I think that this is appropriately reflected in the Treasury market this morning, it increases the global uncertainties that has the Fed so content to cut rates in a preemptive fashion. And so if anything, it would lead me to think that it increases the probability for an additional 25 basis point rate cut in October after what is widely expected to be a quarter point later this week.
Is the fact that this particular attack is coming at a time when we would expect demand on the consumer side to go down just by virtue of the time of year, does that have any impact?
I do think, if anything, it will reduce the amount of downside for the consumer in terms of what the impact will be on spending patterns and consumption. However, the industry is set up in such a way that we would expect the normal reductions in inventories just to simply be exacerbated by this. So the relatively limited on that front, I would say.
So you're thinking that there is a pretty good possibility then that we could see, in addition to a rate cut this month, one next month as well. What about for the rest of this year?
I think that that is the biggest question that the market is grappling with at the moment. If we use the experience of the mid-90s to inform how we should define a fine-tuning or preemptive rate cuts, that in those two episodes we saw 25 basis point cuts three in a row, or effectively in a row, for an aggregate of 75 basis points. That's exactly what the Treasury market is pricing in at this moment. If the Fed is going to end there, they need to start sending that message early.
Is it fair, though, to compare the current situation for the Fed to the 90s, given all of the mounting geopolitical risks that the Fed has to grapple with here?
I would say fair might not be the case, but at this moment it is the best guide that we have, and that is the way that the market does seem to be trading it. The other good counterargument is it fair to comp it versus the 90s, given how low rates were when this rate cutting cycle started? So a lot of criticisms against using the 90s. However, that seems to be the default for the market at the moment.
So in our last minute here, what's the difficulty for the Fed weighing the global risks to the resiliency of the consumer? I mean, we've continued to see retail sales hold up and consumer confidence hold up.
Yeah, I think more broadly, the bigger issue is that the Fed has become the de facto central bank to the world, and they need to act preemptively in an environment where the U.S. economy is frankly on relatively strong footing, but the global prospects have dimmed rather dramatically. And then the question becomes, how does that flow through to a spike in equity volatility, which leads to tighter financial conditions that then ultimately hurts the U.S. economy? And that's what the Fed at this moment is trying to avoid.
All
right. Well, again, the Fed rate decision, of course, coming on Wednesday. We will have full coverage, as always, as you've come to expect here on Bloomberg Radio. Ian Lingen, head of U.S. rate strategy, BMO Capital Markets. Thanks for joining us on this Monday morning as we continue to take a look at risk-off sentiment following the weekend attack in Saudi Arabia. S&P futures are down by 14 points right now. Dow futures down 118. NASDAQ futures down 60. The 10-year up 20, 30 seconds, yield 1.82%. 2-year yield 1.75%. And just taking a look at the oil market right now, West Texas Intermediate is higher by 8.8%, $4.83 higher at $59.60 a barrel. This is Bloomberg. And it's 5:25 on Wall Street. Straight ahead, whom to blame for the Saudi oil attack? Plus, we will have a fuller check of the markets and bring you all the latest in business, economics, and finance. I'm Nathan Hager. This is Bloomberg.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It is 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. Oil is surging, posting its biggest intraday gain ever after a strike on an oil facility in Saudi Arabia removed about 5% of global supplies. Yemen's Houthi rebels are claiming responsibility for the attack, though Secretary of State Mike Pompeo blames Iran, and President Trump said the U.S. is locked and loaded if it's found that Iran is behind the strike. Saul Kavonic is head of oil and gas equities research at Credit Suisse.
This is arguably the largest strategic critical piece of oil infrastructure globally, accounting for over 5% of global oil supply. Now, we're waiting to hear more from the Saudis regarding how long it's going to take for this to ramp up, but there's indication they could get about a third of the supply back within the next 24 hours, but it could still take weeks until we see a resumption of full production capacity from this facility.
Now, for oil markets, it is the worst sudden disruption ever, though Saudi Arabia could return some supply within days. Sarah Vakshuri is president of SVB Energy International.
According to Saudi officials, we have about 5.7 million barrels per day of output cut and suspension. So this is about almost half of Saudi Arabia's production. This is huge. But the key point is that Saudi Arabia itself has currently nearly 188 million barrels of oil inventories. Saudi has about 30 days of supplying its outage from domestic inventories.
And Brent crude futures in London jumped $12 at the open, though prices have since pulled back. Checking oil now, Brent is up 9.5% at $65.91 a barrel. NYMEX crude oil up 8.7% at $59.63.
On the economic front, data from China are weighing on sentiment, with a slowdown in growth showing no signs of abating. Bloomberg's Tom McKenzie reports from Beijing.
Industrial production rose 4.4% last month, the lowest since 2002. Retail sales expanded 7.5% from 7.6% in July, and fixed asset investment slowed to 5.5% from 5.7% as business sentiment continued to cool. Economists say the data bolsters the case for more monetary and fiscal measures to support an economy buffeted by a domestic slowdown and U.S. tariffs. In Beijing, Tom McKenzie, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Tom, thank you. Back here in the U.S., Purdue Pharma has filed for bankruptcy with a $10 billion plan to settle claims it fueled the opioid epidemic. The Chapter 11 filing could short-circuit more than 2,000 lawsuits against Purdue and its owners, the Sackler family. S&P futures down 12 points, Dow futures down 99, NASDAQ futures down 53. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
All right. Thank you, Karen. It is 5:33 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr is here with more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. Several Democratic presidential candidates are calling for the impeachment of Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh in the face of a new uninvestigated allegation of sexual impropriety when he was in college. Kavanaugh was confirmed last October after emotional hearings in the Senate over a sexual assault allegation from his high school years. The New York Times now reports that Kavanaugh faced a separate allegation from his time at Yale University and that the FBI did not investigate the claim. Senator Amy Klobuchar, who was on ABC's This Week, commented on Kavanaugh's confirmation.
I strongly opposed him based on his views on executive power, which will continue to haunt our country, as well as how he behaved, including the allegations that we are hearing more about today.
ABC's This Week can be heard Sundays on Bloomberg Radio. President Trump defended Kavanaugh, tweeting such lies about him. Brett Kavanaugh should start suing people for libel, or the Justice Department should come to his rescue. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo announced an executive action to ban the sale of flavored e-cigarettes across the Empire State.
There are much better ways to stop smoking than vaping. There are patches, there are lozenges, there are gums, there are therapy sessions, there are medications. There's a whole host of ways to stop smoking, which are better for you than vaping.
New York joins Michigan, which passed a similar ban earlier this month, banning flavored vapes. Iran said it will release a UK-flagged oil tanker it has detained for nearly 2 months as tensions rise in the region following attacks on Saudi oil facilities blamed by the U.S. on Iran. Street brawls broke out in Hong Kong after another day of protests Sunday. Bloomberg's Karen Lee has more from Hong Kong.
Clashes between protesters and police, marked by tear gas, water cannons, and petrol bombs, gave few signs that protests now in their fourth month will fizzle out anytime soon. On Sunday, both sides appeared to get more aggressive earlier on than during the previous 14 weekends of the movement. In Hong Kong, Karen Lee, Bloomberg Daybreak.
He was the front man for the rock band The Cars. Rick Ocasek is dead at age 75. Global news 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. Coming up to 5:36 on Wall Street, time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Here's John Stashower.
Nathan, very small margin for error for the Mets right now and a costly loss last night. Brandon Nimmo had a two-run triple in the second inning, but the Mets failed to score after that. The Dodgers came back to win 3-2. Justin Wilson and Seth Lugo, who've been the Mets' two best relievers, gave up runs in the eighth and ninth innings. Washington and the Cubs are the wild card leaders, with Milwaukee just behind. The Mets are four games behind the Cubs, but Met manager Mickey Callaway knows his team has a knack for winning when they have to.
When their back's against the wall, they do special things. They prove that time and time again, and I think they're going to continue to prove that. We got to go take care of business in Colorado. Tough place to go, a tough travel night. There's no excuses. We got to wake up, come out, swing the bats, and get the job done.
You have 10 games in a row against teams under 500. Yankees lost 2 of 3 to a team under 500. Toronto won 6-4. Yanks now tied with Houston for the best record. The Giants are 0-2, beaten by Buffalo 28-14. Like last week, quick start for Saquon Barkley, but he was relatively quiet after that. Slow start for Eli Manning, 1 for 7 in the first quarter. Eli did come on later, but he had 2 interceptions. And the Giants, since the end of 2016, are 8-26. 4-13 at home. Jets and Browns tonight. Odell Beckham back at MetLife. Both teams lost last week. Trevor Siemian quarterbacks the Jets for the ill Sam Darnold. Good one last night. Two recent NFC Championship teams. Matt Ryan hooked up with Julio Jones, a 54-yard touchdown with just over 2 minutes left. The Falcons beat the Eagles 24-20. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan.
All right, John, thank you. It's 5:37 on Wall Street, and the latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now, with the cover on how cancer-causing elements have ended up in Americans' blood pressure pills. Anna Edney wrote the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
World Health Organization classifies it as what's called a probable carcinogen, and this is because there's been no testing in humans. The Food and Drug Administration has said that they think this could, worst case, lead to cancer in 1 in 8,000 people who took these drugs.
And you can read more about this and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why. Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now. And listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time on Bloomberg Radio. It's 5:38 on Wall Street. Time for the Tri-State Business Report, brought to you by Virgin Atlantic. Over 300 hours of onboard entertainment, flatbeds for napping, and afternoon tea. Daily nonstop flights to the UK in partnership with Delta Airlines. Here's Bloomberg's Ed Corey. Good morning, Ed.
Morning, Nathan. Well, as you heard, Governor Andrew Cuomo says New York will ban the sale of flavored e-cigarettes beginning next month. He says the state's health commissioner will call on the Public Health and Health Planning Council to enact the ban and declare flavored e-cigarettes a public health crisis. Unions in New York are pushing to change state law to extend employment protections for app-based workers, according to the Wall Street Journal. Most, including drivers for Uber and Lyft, are now considered independent contractors and are not covered by New York's wage and hour laws. The former Ciba Geigy Superfund site could soon be home to a massive solar farm. Asbury Park Press says Toms River Merchant Solar plans to lease about 166 acres at a Superfund site from BASF. The project would be the biggest solar field in the state. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Nathan?
Thanks, Ed. 5:39 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for WFLA in Orlando, I'm reporting that Disney CEO Bob Iger has resigned from Apple's board as the video streaming rivalry heats up.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KFAB in Omaha. A measure that tracks freight volume is signaling an economic contraction by year's end.
I'm Andrew O'Day on 1010 Winds in New York. I'm talking about labor groups pressing New York to regard Uber and Lyft drivers as employees, not contractors.
I'm Caroline Hepke on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're reporting on the impact on the British economy of the confusion around Brexit.
I'm Ed Corey on WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting General Motors workers are on strike.
And later today, we get regional data on U.S. manufacturing. Economists are betting on a third straight gain for this month's factory report from the New York Fed. Bloomberg's Vinny Del Giudice reports.
The gains have been tepid after the New York Fed's factory index dropped in June to the lowest since 2016. White House tariffs have added to the cost of imported parts and supplies. Exports are touch and go due to tariffs and a general slowdown in the global economy. On Tuesday, we'll see national data on industrial production from the Fed in Washington, and economists are forecasting a modest August rebound. Vinny Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's coming up to 5:41 on Wall Street. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Does the world have enough oil to cope with attacks? It's the question Bloomberg opinion columnist Julian Lee is asking this morning. He joins us next.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Oil jumping the most on record after a strike on a Saudi Arabian oil facility removed about 5% of global supplies. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. NYMEX crude oil is up 8.6% at $4.74 this morning at $59.60 a barrel. Brent jumping 9.2% at $65.78. Futures are lower with S&P futures down about 15 points. Dow futures down 120. NASDAQ futures down 61. The DAX in Germany's down 0.8%. 10-year Treasury up 20-30 seconds, yield 1.82%. Yield on the 2-year, 1.74%. COMEX gold is up 0.8% or $11.70 at $15.11.20 an ounce. The euro 1.1063 against the dollar, the British pound 1.2437, and the yen at 107.71. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, President Trump tweeted that the U.S. has reason to believe that we know who is responsible for an attack on a Saudi Arabian oil field. And the country is, quote, locked and loaded, depending on verification following the crippling strike. Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh faces new allegations of inappropriate sexual behavior as a college student in the 1980s. The allegations were first reported by the New York Times. Tropical storm Umberto has now been upgraded to a Category 1 hurricane. The Bahamas were spared any damage from Umberto, but Bermuda may receive some bad weather. In the NFL, the Giants lost. The Patriots won along with the Ravens and 49ers. The Redskins and Raiders lost. The Jets host the Browns tonight. In baseball, the Yankees and Mets lost. The Red Sox won along with the Orioles, A's, Giants, and Nationals. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg.
Bloomberg Opinion, informed perspectives, and expert data-driven commentary on breaking news.
It is 5:49 on Wall Street, and it is time to check in with Bloomberg Opinion columnist and oil strategist Julian Lee joins us now from our London bureau as we continue to watch the oil market following the weekend drone attacks in Saudi Arabia. What do you see as the long-term impact from this, Julian? Are we needing to brace for a prolonged disruption?
I think it's very difficult to tell at the moment. We have had very little in terms of information out of Saudi Aramco on the extent of the damage to either of its two facilities. And this, you know, it is two facilities that have been attacked. And I think really until we get some credible information on how much damage has been done, we really don't know how long this is going to last. The big problem, I think, is that roughly half of Saudi Arabia's oil production is processed at the Abqaiq facility. This is the larger of the two that was attacked. And that means that unless the facilities there are repaired quickly, it's going to have an impact on a lot of Saudi production. We will, I think, over the coming days and weeks, see them bring back into operation some of the fields that they have either reduced pumping from or shut down as part of their long-term spare capacity plans. Some of those offshore in the Persian Gulf that don't rely on the Abqaiq processing facility. But I think there are going to be problems with the different crude grades. The offshore grades are typically heavier and have more sulfur in them. Part of what the Abqaiq facility does is to remove the sulfur from a lot of the Saudi crude. And that could potentially cause problems if they can't repair it relatively quickly.
I want to go back to something you said earlier. Until we get credible information on the damage to the Abqaiq facility, what would credible information look like? And how long do you think it's going to take for that information to surface?
Well, I think that, you know, the credible information is an assessment of precisely what parts of the infrastructure have been damaged, how significant that damage is, and what kinds of repairs are necessary to get it working again. We've seen recently pictures that show puncture marks in some spherical tanks at Abqaiq. These have been identified as being part of the process that removes hydrogen sulfide from the crude. The fact that they're spherical tanks suggests that they are operating under pressure. So repairing those puncture marks is presumably going to be more complicated than just putting a piece of sticking plaster over them, for example. But that may suggest that repairs might take a little bit longer than they would have done if they'd been simply atmospheric pressure storage tanks, for example. But we need that kind of detail, I think. And, you know, understandably, that takes time to come through. The engineers at Aramco have got to assess what has happened. The last thing they want to do is to come out and categorically say, we'll have this fixed within X number of days, and then have to come out 3 days later and say, oh, well, actually, you know, it's going to take us a bit longer or a bit less. They want to nail this down, I think, before they start saying things, and that's understandable.
Yeah, and in the meantime, while we wait for that information to get nailed down, the President of the United States says that he's ready to tap into the strategic reserve if necessary, and the International Energy Agency says it's monitoring the situation in terms of supply. Does the world have enough supply to weather a prolonged disruption?
It certainly has enough supply to weather a disruption that lasts even for a month or more. We can draw crude oil and refined products out of these strategic reserves. The Strategic Petroleum Reserve in the United States is one part of that, but other OECD countries and indeed non-OECD countries have strategic stocks that were put in place precisely for this kind of eventuality. Those can be drawn down at a rate of as much as, I think it's about 12 million barrels a day for the first month or so, and the rate that you can draw oil out of them declines over time. But there is clearly plenty of oil in these strategic reserves. The International Energy Agency has a program in place to deal with these kinds of eventualities that doesn't just rely on strategic stocks. It relies on demand management and sharing of resources among member countries. So that will happen. Saudi Arabia will seek to, as I said, boost production from other parts of its infrastructure that remain operational to offset some of this loss. I have no doubt that the other OPEC and non-OPEC countries who have been cutting output will ease back on those cuts if this looks like being a prolonged outage.
Bloomberg opinion columnist and oil strategist Julian Lee, thank you for joining us from our London bureau. Karen.
All right, thanks, Nathan. It is 5:54 on Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg Law Report, brought to you by American Arbitration Association. International trade or business dispute? Resolve faster with the International Center for Dispute Resolution, the leader in alternative dispute resolution around the world, ICDR.org. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Steve Potisk in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington newsroom.
A group of House Ways and Means Committee members has come up with a workaround for the Trump tax law's limit on state and local deductions. The plan is to turn that outline into legislation. Sweeping changes in Chinese intellectual property laws still aren't enough to allow U.S. pharmaceutical companies access to China's huge market. And both GE and Google are expanding their artificial intelligence offerings in the medical field. GE got FDA approval for an X-ray machine that uses AI, and Google Cloud will work with the Mayo Clinic to improve data-driven care.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need on one legal research platform. Guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
Now, another legal news we're watching. The Trump administration revoking a controversial Obama-era regulation known as the Waters Rule, or WOTUS, that shielded many U.S. wetlands and streams from pollution. We get more on this story from Charles Warren, chair of the environmental practice at Cramer Levin.
The Army Corps of Engineers and the Environmental Protection Agency have put out rules over a period of time to govern what can be discharged into what they call waters of the United States. That's what they mean by WOTUS. Rivers, interstate waters, territorial seas, and things like that, those are all waters that the rules apply to. And then they also said additional categories like tributaries to lakes and streams and adjacent waters. If you found ditches that were covered by rain and things like that, or in the 100-year floodplain and things like that, those would be covered. Covered means that they require a permit from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers if you're going to try to fill them up. In other words, put dirt and stuff, cover them up. And this generated a lot of controversy. And the farmers were against it, the real estate people were against it, and just rural landowners in general were against it. And there was litigation, and it was actually enjoined in 28 states and went into effect in 22 states. And when the Trump administration came in, they basically said, we don't like this rule, we want to get rid of it. And they tried to delay the rule, and that was quashed in the courts. But then what they've done is in a two-step process, in the first step to repeal the 2015 rule, and they're going to, in probably by the end of the year, put a new rule in, which is going to narrow the types of waters that will be covered by the rule. And that's going to please, obviously, the farmers and the landowners and the real estate people, and displease the environmental people who believe that it will endanger a lot of wetlands and will lose a lot of wetlands.
And that was Charles Warren, chair of the environmental practice at Cramer Levin. You can listen to more legal analysis like this on Bloomberg Politics, Policy, Power, and Law, weekdays at 12 p.m. Wall Street time.